You are listening to the Dan Patrick Show on Fox Sports Radio.
Oh, it is a Meat Friday in more ways than one. Welcome to the program, already in progress, final hour. Coming up, we'll talk to the man who wrote the book on the Patriots, literally Seth Wickersham. Got a new book out talking about some of the spicy details behind the scenes with Brady and Belichick. By the way, don't be angry if the Patriots and the Buccaneers game is not a good game. It's a great story. Nobody's saying, boy, this is going to be one of the all-time great games. I mean, this is Super Bowl champs versus a rookie quarterback. Tampa Bay is a 7-point favorite. I think we think this is going to be a slugfest, down to the wire, last second field goal or last second drive, games on the line, Tom's leading it down, Belichick devises some defensive scheme. It may not go as scripted, just saying. It could be one-sided, maybe 19-17 kind of final. Last night, Cincinnati Bengals got a win. Not impressive, but got the win. They're now 3-1, and Urban Meyer is yet to win a game in the NFL and had this to say afterwards.
Frustrating. How frustrating is that?
That's devastating. Heartbreaking. Usually I'm not wrong about stuff like that I just see a good team in there. I see good guys, good hearts. I see guys at work, and I told them I'm not wrong. I'm not wrong about that stuff. And this team's going to win some games.
Jacksonville is the fifth team in NFL history to lose 19 consecutive games, tying the 07 through 09 Detroit Lions for the second longest losing streak in the Super Bowl era. The Oakland Raiders have the record set back in 1961-62, the Raiders losing 19 consecutive games. Now, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers have the longest losing streak in the Super Bowl era at 26 games. So that's consecutive games for the Jacksonville Jaguars. Wasn't that long ago that they were on the verge of upsetting the New England Patriots and going to the Super Bowl. Boy, that seems like a long, long time ago. Ticket prices for the Patriots. You know, this is Tom Brady's last time in New England. Unless he plays till he's 50, you figure that this will be the last time. So trying to get seats and what they're going for, you know, you're seeing anywhere from $7,000 per seat for a great location there. But once again, just caution you that it might not turn out to be a great game. Great storylines, interesting atmosphere there, but that doesn't mean this will be a competitive game. Yes, McLovin.
I was going to pitch a poll question. Would the Patriots be good right now if Tom Brady was their quarterback? Or would they be a contender?
I'm going to say yes, because it just feels like there are times when you go, how's he doing it with that offense? Now, he was always... It felt like they always had a good defense. They had an opportunistic defense. We never thought that he had a lot of great offensive weapons, except for when he had Gronk at his peak and Aaron Hernandez. But he made use of Kevin Falk and James White, Troy Brown. There were just times where you go, I don't know how he's doing it, but he's doing it. I would think that Brady would make them a contender. Maybe not a serious contender, but that they would still be a contender. 877-3DP-SHOW. Email address, dp@danpatrick.com. Twitter handle, @DP Show. This, of course, being a Meat Friday, in case you're wondering. Pork tenderloin with apple jelly glaze, rosemary, and thyme. You can't just do rosemary and you can't just do thyme. Infused mashed potatoes with cream. All of the recipes available if you subscribe to the newsletter. Doesn't cost you anything. We send it out every day. It recaps the show. The backroom guys do a wonderful job with it. All the recipes are on there for all of our Meat Friday feast here. Say good morning to Peacock, our streaming partner. Download the app. Watch for free. And the Premier League. Catch tons of exciting action with the Premier League. Go to PeacockTV.com to get started. Ben Simmons is due 25% of his salary today. That's $8.25 million. Whether or not the Sixers issue the check on day five of Ben Simmons' holdout, a source telling Mark Stein, Simmons' camp believes it will ultimately get the money either way after a trade or separate resolution. In case you missed this, yesterday Joel Embiid took some big shots at his teammate Ben Simmons. Simmons doesn't want to play in Philly. He's not reporting to training camp. And now you've got some drama. This is the norm for an NBA star who wants to switch teams. We've seen this before, and it makes you think there's got to be an easier way. Every time there's a bad fit, do we really need to play it out like something like a Shakespeare play? Ben Simmons' saga has a Hamlet feel to it. You know, to dunk or not to dunk, that's the question. In the playoffs, he went with not to dunk, and that's why we're here. LeBron is King Lear. Who can forget the play Othello about, no, it's not Othello Harrington, by the way, or Romeo Langford and Juliet. All right, maybe the NBA drama isn't that nerdy, but it's certainly over the top, and this is right there with battle lines are drawn with Ben Simmons, his camp, and the 76ers, but also the commissioner and the NBA Players Association going to get involved in this because 76ers, why are you going to pay him if he doesn't want to play there? How about you just sit out? Now, they can fine him, and it might be $1,000 or $100,000 a day. Well, what's he going to make with all of that money? He's due $40 million, and he might go, yeah, go ahead, fine me all you want, but I want out of here. And Joel Embiid said something that I thought was really interesting, that, you know, basically Ben Simmons is being selfish. And to a degree, he is. Like, Ben played poorly. Like, what happened first? That your teammates turned on you or the fans turned on you? You played poorly. He put himself in this position. And if I'm arguing this on behalf of the 76ers, I'm going to go, he put himself in a position by playing poorly, now doesn't want to play here because of the reaction. Okay? If he plays well, there's no drama here. There's no issue. They would love him. He played poorly. Now you want them to pay you because you paid poorly and you want out. Your feelings are hurt. Instead of, I'm going to come back and I'm going to show everybody I can be an elite player. I can be a good shooter. I can go to the free throw line. You know, I look at Giannis. Giannis can't shoot. He can't. But he's not afraid. And that's the difference. Giannis is not afraid to fail. And that might be, I don't make three-pointers, or I don't do well at the free throw line, but I keep bringing it to you. Ben doesn't. That's the biggest difference. Now, is Giannis a better player than Ben? Yes. But I'm not afraid to fail. Giannis shoots free throws where you go, my God, how's that possible? But he's working to get better. He wants to get better. And he's not afraid. Ben's afraid. Ben doesn't want to be embarrassed. You know, it's like having kids, and I have three kids who are Ben's age in that ballpark. You know, the sensitivity level sometimes, it's like, where's this come from? But that's the generation. You know, Giannis coming from another country to the United States, and maybe he's just wired differently. Like how he grew up, what he had to get through to get to this point. And he's just not afraid. And I admire that so much about him. When I watch him, and, you know, when you're watching, you go, I'm a better shooter than he is. But he's not afraid. Take it to the hoop. Go to the line. I don't want him taking threes. And I did suggest once they got to the NBA Finals, you put him down on the blocks because he's a more athletic Kevin McHale, who's in the top five, to me, low post moves guy that I ever saw in the NBA, you can't guard him down there. And he dominated. But Ben Simmons has to get over this fear of failure. Same thing with Lonzo Ball. And I think Lonzo is actually making steps to being a quality outside shooter. But he also is going to another team here. And maybe that happens with Ben. Ben wants the offense built around him. I would say, Ben, show me why I should build the offense around you. Do you think you'll make your free throws when you're out of Philadelphia? Is there something about the backdrop there, depth perception? Is the rim 10.5 feet high? Like, come on, help me out here. And it doesn't feel like he's getting better. It feels like he's taking a step back. And do I think he's going to be in Philadelphia? No, I didn't think that. After that game, I'm like, he can't stay here. Because those Philadelphia fans are not going to be St. Louis Cardinal fans. All right, Ben, come on, let's go. We're with you. Yeah, Seton.
Does Markelle Fultz play into this at all?
Well, Markelle Fultz had the yips.
Is that different than...
And he had, you know, surgery, and it's his shoulder. So I think that was just a breakdown of him physically. Ben, it's mental. Like, Markelle Fultz has played okay in Orlando.
And that's where how I got there is that, you know, he left and was able to figure it out. He was able to get his shot back. He was able to get his confidence back.
I think he became healthy or healthier, but he didn't demand a trade. And he was at least trying to work that out. Ben, I don't want to see an LA Fitness video. I don't need to see you in a pickup game. I don't need to see any of that. Growing up, I never saw anybody's off-season workouts. I never once went, I wonder what Larry Bird's doing today. I wonder what Michael's doing today. I know that they wanted to do it every single night in the season, and they weren't afraid. None of those guys were afraid. You can't play that game being nervous, afraid, trepidation. And, you know, Ben needs to grow up. Take matters into your own hands. Attack this, not run away from it. Hey, I don't like this. I want to get out of here. Okay. What happens when it doesn't go well in the next place? Do you then go, hey, these people are being mean here. I want out of here. Is he talented? Yes. Would I want to take a shot at him? If I'm San Antonio, I would love to see him maybe go to San Antonio. Right? Quieter city. They're non-threatening. Media coverage nowhere near what it is in Philadelphia. And then you could say to Ben, come on in. Greg Popovich doesn't like the three, so you don't have to worry about shooting threes. And you just let him kind of find his place there. See if, you know, he can build his confidence. I mean, he's 25. Feels like, you know, he's been around longer than that, but he's 25. And I would have to give him that opportunity to find yourself. You know, I do this with my children. You're like, at a certain age, like, what do you want to do? Who are you? And my kids can't shoot threes either, by the way. Just saying. And they're a little better at the free throw line than Ben. Yeah, Paulie.
When Ben Simmons was 21, he was averaging 16, 8, and 8. It looked great. He wasn't shooting a lot. He wasn't shooting for the outside. And he's actually gone down a little bit every single category 3 years later. When Giannis was 21, he was averaging 16, 7, and 5. 3 years later, he's averaging 30, 14, and 6.
Yeah.
And it back-to-back MVPs.
Limerick greeting cards. Go to danpatrick.com. Todd has come up with 6 different Limerick greeting cards. They're wonderful. Not the limericks, but the cards are really, really beautiful.
Got to get that in.
Yeah. A bundle of limericks. Don't worry about buying greeting cards for the rest of the year. Go to danpatrick.com. Plus, great T-shirts there. The limited edition tailgate package and Penny's Bang Biscuits. A lot of great items there. A couple of phone calls, and then we'll take a break. We'll talk about the Patriots with Brady and Belichick, the new book that is out. Josh in Minnesota leads us off this hour. Hi, Josh.
Hey, Dan. First time, long time, 6'195". I was calling in to say I think the best place for Shohei Ohtani to land would actually be with the Colorado Rockies, and I think that for two reasons. For one, because half of his games he's going to be hitting in Coors Field, one of the most hitter-friendly parks in the league. But then you look at the rest of the Rockies' schedule. They're playing in historically pitcher-friendly stadiums such as San Francisco, and it's the Padres. And so I think just looking at him being such a two-way player, just knowing that I think that would be a good place for him to land and really just enhance both of his skills. So thanks for taking the time.
Thank you,
guys, Josh. Have a great rest of your day.
Thank you, Josh. I don't know how he's wired. I think he wanted to land in a media-friendly city. The Yankees realized that they were not going to be involved in the pursuit. I think he ruled out the, you know, a bigger market there as far as New York City. Yes, McLovin.
That might be the dumbest call we've gotten in the entire. How can you say Shohei Ohtani should go to Colorado? He's like, because it would help him as a slugger.
He's as a pitcher too.
He's the one slugger in 100 years who has to worry about not playing in a pitcher in a bad pitcher park. Of course, he doesn't want to go to Colorado, right? Like,
if you're going to have him as a pitcher.
Yes, which I think you are. I think that was his point. Yeah. Like, that's the exact opposite place. Sorry, Josh. No,
I don't know. I mean, that was kind of rough to say that about Josh.
No. Actually, he made a good point, but like, you don't want to go to Colorado. You want to go to the exact medium stadium where you can hit home runs, but you don't know.
Okay, here's the thing. I'd rather go to a pitcher's ballpark if I'm Shohei Ohtani, because I hit the ball so damn far. What does it matter? Like, oh my gosh, that barely got over the wall. Good thing he's in. I mean, I want to go to something that if I pitch, I'm going to keep it in the ballpark. And when I do hit, it doesn't matter which ballpark I'm in. How about that? I'll hang up and listen. Yes, Paulie.
What if you pitched for the Dodgers and batted for the Angels and played for both teams? Mm. That'd be great for his brand. Mm. I mean, really expand it, the fan base.
Okay.
Dodgers would sign up for that. They'd pay him $25 million. They'll throw that out there, no problem.
Brandy in Iowa. Brandy's back. Hi, Brandy. What's on your mind?
Hey, Dan. Happy Friday.
Thank you, Brandy.
You brought up a stat that I'm calling about. If you, as a refresher, my son has adopted Detroit for his fandom. And today's been a rough year to start is an understatement. So I told him I'd reach out to you, especially after we see if the Jags could match the Lions' futility last night with the losing streak, to see if he has any hope. The Lions' last win was actually in Chicago, or against Chicago, December of last year. Just calling to see who's going to match streaks. Is the Lions going to keep pace with the Jags and they match the year? And then before I go, I've been watching you on Peacock, and I don't know what it is about today, but I don't know if you, do you guys have time to throw on some Little Smokies? I don't know what it is.
Oh.
I'm craving some Smokies.
Wow. 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 That's
bring it out in
shot,
here. We'll go side by side, big guy.
Wow.
I'll go.
Wow. I don't know if you can call him big guy.
That's not a look in I was anticipating, Paul.
Yeah.
You random viewers.
See, you know how competitive I am.
It's true.
Paulie has his Speedo on. He lost a bet. He did have a Speedo on. He lost the Michael Phelps bet. So, it, you know, to his credit, waxed his chest. Had the goggles on, the swim cap, and Michael Phelps' Speedo.
He's more of a grower than a shower. That's okay.
I didn't want to dominate the show.
Well, I think we could put some Little Smokies on, don't you think, Todd? Don't you love those Little Smokies?
I sure do.
You know, a little pig in a blanket.
That's what I'm talking about. Who wouldn't want that?
I think we should take a break here. It's 18 after the hour. This, I think, is still the Dan Patrick Show. Thanks for listening to the Dan Patrick Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning, 9 to noon Eastern, or 6 to 9 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Dan Patrick Show at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR. Or stream us live on the Peacock app. Wasn't long ago where Joel Embiid sent out sort of a cryptic message to Ben Simmons into the media that he wanted Ben back. And then all of a sudden he has a press conference yesterday or part of media day, and that's all gone. Like I said at the time, it felt like management said to Joel Embiid, hey, say something nice about Ben Simmons. You know, we still want to trade him, but we want to have, you know, teams around the league seem like he's really, really valuable to us. And then Embiid did. And I went, I don't believe a word of that. And then it came out yesterday, basically trashed him. All right, we'll get to more phone calls. It is a Meat Friday, and right now we have pork on the grill right now. So, among other things, 877-3DP show email address dp at danpatrick.com. He's Seth Wickersham, ESPN senior writer, and he's got a new book out. It's Better to Be Feared: The New England Patriots Dynasty and the Pursuit of Greatness. Seth, thanks for joining us. What was the toughest story in all of this to crack?
Oh, man, that's a great question. Thanks for having me. I think that the toughest story, and this may sound a little bit more thematic than specific, but it's trying to get inside how Bill Belichick and Tom Brady work on a day-to-day basis and try to diagnose and understand the key ingredients that have led to their greatness and this unprecedented run that they had together. And then also look at some of the costs of that greatness. I think that those were the things that I was trying to pursue as diligently as I possibly could.
Easier to get information on Brady or Belichick?
That's a great question. I'd say it's about the same. I mean, I wouldn't say it's easy, but, you know, again, I've been doing this for 20 years now. I've written many stories about Tom Brady. I've been at his house. I've been at his Super Bowl party. I've had many conversations with Bill Belichick. I know the people around them. I know the coaches on the staff. And so I just felt like that I could pursue this project with a lot of confidence and hopefully tell a story that fans like.
What's the one that you, the story that you found out more information than previously believed or reported?
Oh, man. I mean, there's a lot of those things. You know, you can go back to, you know, Tom Brady's days in Michigan and the night that he was going to leave and what his therapist and counselor told him, you know, the tension of 2017, which I obviously wrote a lot about the time, and, you know, just learning a little bit more about, you know, where that came from, how bad things got, you know, how Brady said, I don't want to play for Bill anymore. And, you know, how close it came to coming to an end there. And, you know, the part of the book in a weird way that I like the best or that I kind of enjoy the most was the middle part, the 10 years that they didn't win a championship, because they were achieving at such a high level and they were in such a cultural and, you know, sports plateau, but they needed to figure out how to get the last percentage of a percentage better so that they could, you know, go over the hump and finally win more Super Bowls rather than narrowly losing them to the New York Giants.
And you've said that you didn't interview Brady or Belichick for this book, but you have interviewed them down through the years. I give you one question for both of them. Let me start with Belichick. The one question you would ask for this book would have been what?
I think I would have asked if it's all worth it. I think that he's become the greatest coach in modern football history. And the casualty of his greatness has been a lot of relationships. You know, you can talk about his relationship with Eric Mangini and how that fell apart when Eric left, and I detail a near fist fight at the league meetings between the two of them. And there's a lot of players over the years who obviously have come out of New England with a really bad taste in their mouth. And then obviously there's Tom Brady. And I think that while there's a lot of love between Brady and Belichick, I think that there's a lot of acrimony, especially on the Brady side, at the way that the past couple years, you know, unfolded. And, you know, that's what I would be curious how he would answer is, you know, if those relationships are some of the costs of his greatness, how does he feel about it? And was it all worth it?
What would be the question you would ask Brady?
You know, I've thought about this a lot, but I actually did ask it to him a couple years ago. And I asked him how long he wanted to live. Because if you look at the way that he's sort of evolved in celebrity, you know, he's become this kind of figure that he's almost a member of like the global elite for whom, you know, human longevity is human destiny. And so I did ask him at one point, like, how long do you want to live? And he had a really thoughtful and you know, reasonable answer where he said, you know, it's not necessarily about how long I want to live, even though he wrote an entire book about reversing the aging process, in his words. It was the quality of life and the fact that he wanted to go skiing and surf and do these things after football, and he was trying to have it all, and we'll see if he can have it all.
Yeah, but if I ask you, how long do you want to live, Seth? What are you going to say?
Well, I didn't write an entire book about reversing the aging process.
I know, but if I'm Tom, it's like I want quality of life. However long I live, I want quality of life. I've always been fascinated with a couple of stories. Was there a power struggle on keeping Jimmy Garoppolo, keeping Tom? Who had the final say? Did Brady go to Kraft and say it's me or him? Belichick hand-delivered Jimmy Garoppolo to Kyle Shanahan, making sure he didn't go to the Cleveland Browns. Help me understand all of that. Illuminate me on, you know, what is fact, what's fiction?
It takes a little bit of time, and I wrote about this a lot at the time. Look, after they beat the Falcons and they had won their fifth Super Bowl, the dynamics in the building just changed. And I think that, you know, Tom Brady started to venture into other things. His TB12 business, he put out the book, he did Time versus Time. He wanted to be treated a little bit differently. And in the middle of it all, you had Alex Guerrero in this business that they were both trying to build together. And the fact that the things that they were saying were often at odds with what the Patriots doctors were saying. And so it was becoming this divisive force in the locker room. Belichick curtailed his access. I mean, think about the Tampa Bay Buccaneers right now. They give Alex Guerrero an office and they gave him a Super Bowl ring. Bill curtailed his access back then. And in the middle of it all, you had Jimmy Garoppolo and the fact that Belichick has a lot of pride and he always wanted to walk away from the Patriots with them set up long-term at quarterback. And he was deeply invested in Jimmy. At one point when Jimmy played, he said, you know, the transition between Brady and Jimmy is really seamless on offense. And there were just a lot of things coming to a head. And so finally Jimmy got shipped. It was obvious that Kraft's loyalties were to Brady. And then that offseason, they lose to the Philadelphia Eagles, and Brady skips the entire offseason program. And so much reporting has come out about how he really didn't know if he wanted to return to the team and, in fact, kind of wanted to be released.
Okay, but did he go to Kraft and say, it's either me or Garoppolo?
Well, that I don't know. But Kraft, Tom Brady didn't get Jimmy Garoppolo traded. I think that it was so obvious that Kraft had stated publicly and privately that Brady had earned the right to walk away on his own terms. And even if Bill was invested in Jimmy, Tom was making it very hard for him to get on the field. They share an agent, Don Yee. There was just a lot of things that were closing in, and Bill was kind of backed into a corner. And so, yes, he calls up Kyle Shanahan. I think it was on Halloween morning. Maybe it was the day before, and offers Jimmy, you know, straight up for a second-round pick.
Belichick has since come out and said, when he's the book has been mentioned, that you know, second, third, fourth-hand news. It feels like information may be coming from Brady's side more than Belichick's side. That probably doesn't take long to go through the Rolodex of Belichick and who he trusts and who would have information here. Is that a fair assessment on how I'm reading who's saying what to whom and when and why?
It's a fair assessment of I think what came out in the news story, but most of the book is not that way. I mean, 95% of the people that I talked to for the book are on the record, and they're primary sources. And the few that I needed to grant anonymity to are the people who had firsthand knowledge of key meetings or dialogue that was said. And so I think with the newser, it definitely, some of the news that came out definitely came out that way. But, you know, specifically with the main anecdote from the news story about Tom Brady and at Robert Kraft's house and telling Robert Kraft he's not going to resign with the team, he wanted to go tell Bill in person, and Bill was unavailable. And, you know, he told a confidant, a very close friend, he thought that was telling of the state of their relationship. You know, Brady didn't deny that yesterday. I mean, Tom is 44 years old and he's good. He figured out a way to thread that needle where he didn't deny it, and he didn't really give anything away either. And, you know, like I said, I did the best I could to try to show this relationship, show their greatness, and show the cost of their greatness.
We're talking to Seth Wickersham, ESPN senior writer, author. The book is available nationally on Tuesday. It's Better to Be Feared, the New England Patriots Dynasty and the Pursuit of Greatness. I've mentioned this story to my audience a couple of times. When I interviewed Brady prior to the Super Bowl with the Eagles, and towards the end, I said, do you think you and Bill will ever get together and reminisce? And Brady, in a moment of truth, said, no. Like, he couldn't believe I was asking that. Almost like, no, are you kidding me? That's not what our relationship... Now, he didn't say that's not what our relationship was about, but that's really how I read it. He's like, no. And I don't know if he caught himself where he gave me what I thought was an honest answer at the time. Instead of saying, well, I hope so, and, you know, we will open up the scrapbook, and, you know, we have so many great memories. He just went, no. Would you say that sums up the relationship between these two, that they're not taking a trip down memory lane anytime soon?
Not anytime soon, but I still think that even if they get on each other's nerves and there's some acrimony, I think, especially on the Brady side right now, over how things ended in New England the past few years. But I think that there's a love there, and I think that that's really important. And you know, as different as they are from a personality standpoint, they have a couple key traits that are almost completely aligned. And I think that one of them, they are steadfast optimists. They kind of come at it from a different angle, but nobody in NFL history has believed in the power and the possibilities of the next play like these guys. I mean, no matter what has happened, they're able to focus on what's in front of them. And you see it play out on these international stages where Brady rallies the team from 28-3 down, and a year before, another brilliant goal line stand by a Belichick defense. I mean, nobody like these two guys, they refuse to concede an inch to anybody else's idea of the inevitable.
I wonder if they get blown out 42-10 by the Falcons. Does Bill move on from Brady sooner?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think that there's a strong likelihood. One of the things I get into in the book is I think that one of the things that reignited their dynasty was in the Baltimore divisional playoff game in 2015 when they were down 14 points in the third quarter and they unveiled that the Baltimore and the Ravens funky formations that completely baffled the Ravens and it got New England back in this game. And if they had lost that game, I don't know what would have happened. I mean, Jimmy Garoppolo had just finished his rookie season. Would they have moved on from Brady right then? But instead, they unveiled this classic formation that completely befuddled the Ravens, got them back in the game, and it really reignited the entire dynasty and led to those three more Super Bowls.
You want to get in on the pregame bet? Is there a hug? Is there a handshake? Is there any contact whatsoever between Brady and Belichick?
So I would bet, and I'm not a bettor, but I would bet that there will be a pregame hug because there'll be too many cameras after the game. And I think they'll both do it because they know that it's in their best interest to do it. And I often wonder, you know, look, I mean, Brady's going to be so focused and so keyed up for this game, whether they will try to show him so much love at that stadium, like a video tribute, whatever, to kind of throw him off.
Oh, I would. Right? Absolutely, Seth. I would. Yeah, I would make him cry.
The Colts did it with Peyton Manning when he came back as a Denver Bronco. They did this big tribute to him, and he started crying during pregame warmups. And so, like, I absolutely think that's the best way to try to throw Brady off.
Great to talk to you, Seth. Congrats on the book, and good luck with the sales.
Thanks, man. I'll talk to you.
That's Seth Wickersham. The book, It's Better to Be Feared, The New England Patriots Dynasty, The Pursuit of Greatness, released nationally on Tuesday, October 12th. Prior to that date, the book can be pre-ordered anywhere where books are sold. Still, I have questions here. And I probably always have questions. It feels like the information is coming from Brady's side of the ball. Because Belichick doesn't strike me as having guys who they're going to leak information. Tom's, you know, here's something that came out. Bill's not going to talk about it. But somebody with Bill might, just to give his side of this. But it feels like on Brady's side, and look, athletes have this. Musicians have that. You have to have somebody who is going to be saying something on your behalf. Do I think Belichick has that? Yes, I do. A fixer. Do I think Tom has that? Yes. Because they can go in and say, hey, you're not right with that. Or, you know what, let's clear that up. Let me give you a little bit more clarity here. That happens. I mean, Paulie's done that for me sometimes. When, I don't want to get involved in something, I'll just say to Paulie, hey, just be the middleman and let him know what they said was wrong. Or, you know, we can clean this up or, you know, I can give you a comment on this. But, you know, these are big-time, big-name guys with big things at stake, not me. And you want to make sure that it's presented in the right way. Tom doesn't want to be the guy who got Jimmy Garoppolo traded. Belichick doesn't want to be the guy who didn't want Tom to stay. Like, everybody has their sides. You know, battle lines are drawn here. But I don't know if we're ever going to get the true story of Malcolm Butler, that you bench him because he didn't have a good practice week prior to the Super Bowl. Knowing that that's going to hurt your chances of winning a Super Bowl. Like, I can send a message to you, but that message might be you're not there for the first series. Now get in there and play. Not you're in the first series on the kickoff. Now you're out for the rest of the game. You know, Belichick not wanting to meet with Tom and COVID. And, you know, okay, fine. But did he reach out after that? Did he care to? I don't know. Like, it's not as big a deal. But I just don't think that it's not who Belichick is. He's not a huggy guy. I don't think he cares about that. Yeah, McLovin.
I love what you guys are talking about, emotional warfare. Like, make a video, put pictures of his kids in Patriots gear around the locker room.
Yes, I would make this as emotional as possible if I'm the Patriots. I would overdo it. I'd put his jersey up in the Patriot Hall of Fame. I would do whatever it would take just to get him off his game. Last call for phone calls, what we learn, what's in store tomorrow. If you're watching on Peacock, we will go to the Traeger Grills, take a break. By the way, the 12:15 podcast today, Paulie is going to join the 12:15 podcast.
Wow, I just found out.
Yes, you did. Mario just sent me the the email. Paul is joining the 12:15 club today. It's the backroom guys. And I don't know if there's more nudity, but it is a small room with a bunch of guys. And Paulie's very comfortable with that. Apparently, wears Speedo into the 12:15 club, the backroom guys podcast. And I love it. I think they do a great job. Take a break. Close up shop after this. Thanks for listening to the Dan Patrick Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning, 9 until noon Eastern, 6 to 9 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. And you can find us on the iHeartRadio app at FSR or stream us live on the Peacock app.
Hey, I'm Doug Gottlieb. The podcast is called All Ball. We usually talk all basketball all the time, but it's more about the stories about what made these people love their sport and all the interesting interactions along the way. We talk to coaches. We talk to players. We tell you stories. You download it. You listen to it. I think you'll like it. Listen to All Ball with Doug Gottlieb on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
My thanks to Tyler. Tyler, the moderator, did a wonderful job. He moderates Chat Row, also runs sound back there. He takes care of my puppy, Winnie, during the show, and he does Meet Friday. Did a wonderful job, Tyler. Nobody else will say nice things about you, but I will. Thank you very much. He's average at a lot of things, but he's better than average when it comes to Meet Friday. Does great. I said to him this morning, I said, do you have any history of being able to cook? And he goes, no. And I go, do you even cook for yourself? And he goes, no. And I said, all right. He's out there vaping. And I'm going, I said, all right, well, knock him dead today. And he goes, I just follow the recipe. You know, Traeger does all the, I said, all right, great. So when I tell you this, I truly believe that. Traeger makes it a whole lot easier. The Traeger Meat Friday, check out a Traeger grill at a local dealer. Visit TraegerGrills.com/DP Show to learn more. Yes, Todd or Paul?
There's some people on our staff, the backroom guys. I would love to know what they do all weekend. Tyler might be the one seat.
I don't want to know.
I do want to know, but I might be disturbing.
I mentioned Mark McGwire, birthday today, 58. Rod Carew, 76. Zach Galifianakis, 52. Bree Larson, 32, and former President Jimmy Carter, 97. Let's see. Paulie is on the 12:15 podcast with the boys. That's available if you get the newsletter, wherever you get your podcast, and kind of backroom dealings there, what the backroom guys think of all this stuff. Paulie, this day in sports history.
1903, the first modern World Series took place. The Boston Pilgrims versus the Pittsburgh Pirates.
I thought they were the Boston Americans.
I might have to check. Okay. 1919, eight players for the Chicago White Sox began their conspiracy to lose the World Series to the major underdog, Cincinnati Reds. Mm. Babe Ruth made his final pitching appearance at 1933. He pitched a complete game, all nine innings, and he hit a home run in the fifth inning.
Mm-hmm.
And 1961, Roger Maris of the Yankees hit his 61st home run of the season to beat Babe Ruth's major league record of 60.
By the way, the first World Series game ever played, the losing pitcher is the winningest pitcher of all time. Cy Young. Cy Young won, 511 games in his career? But he never won the Cy Young.
Travis.
I know. Never won the Cy Young. Let's see here. Ryan in Honolulu joins us. Hi, Ryan.
Hello! Oh, Dan. Paulie making good on his snug Speedo bet today. Attaboy.
Did your wife, is your wife watching the show today?
My wife is asleep, Dan. It's 5:50 a.m.
Okay. All right.
But I need to address the elephant in the room. Or is it more of a turtle? Are you having bratwurst for Meat Friday or Little Smokies? Maybe some franken beans. How about sides? Are we talking eggplant or baby carrots?
Send them up, knocking them down.
Are there ding-dongs for dessert or just Twinkies? I'll keep hammering away here, Dan. If Seton is Jimmy Jimison, then Paulie is John Johnson. Oh, Paul Leonoli's glory. How ironic, I'm watching Peacock. I was going to do mock headlines for Jags, but, you know,
I don't know
if I'm eligible for segment of the year, Dan. Aloha.
All right. Thank you, Ryan. Tell your wife we said hello.
Yeah. Showed himself out.
Yeah,
nice.
Yeah, he did. Yeah. I like that. Let's see. What else do we have here? Who wants to follow that? Anybody have the Patriots? Winning outright. Anybody got the Patriots?
Nobody.
I'll take the Patriots winning outright.
That's bold.
Yeah.
And then do you wear Michael Phelps Speedo on Monday?
I'll have it laundered.
I'm going to wear Paulie's Michael Phelps Speedo.
Right.
Yeah, on Monday. It's not that bad. I think the Patriots, I'll take the Patriots to win this game. Yeah, McClellan.
We should do the other end of the bet, which was to put him in a suit of armor and make him swim a lap.
Oh, I know. I know. That was my favorite. If you could have gotten Michael Phelps in a suit of armor swimming in the pool, and Paulie would have raced him and still lost to Phelps in a suit of armor.
That'd been good TV.
Yeah, I know. Let's see. Final results of the poll question, McLevin.
Who would you build around, Trevor Lawrence or Joe Burrow? 68% Joe Burrow.
Yeah, I get that. Recency bias as well. And I'm rooting for the Patriots to win because the content that will... If the Buccaneers win, nobody's going to be surprised. But I'm not... There's no guarantee on this is going to be a good game, by the way. It could be field goals, sloppy, not great. Yeah, Todd, you look like you're ready to say something.
Oh, I was going to tell you what I learned today.
Oh, what did you learn today, Todd?
Rodney Harrison would tell the Patriots not to get tricked by where Tom Brady's looking first. Hold your ground and be patient.
McLovin, what did you learn?
I didn't learn anything, but I have a question. Are you guys going to watch the Sopranos movie this weekend? We just got a tweet about that. I forgot. It comes out today.
Probably not. Since I didn't watch The Sopranos, I'm not going to watch the prequel. Yeah, see.
Is that like one that you could watch from home, or do you have to go to a theater?
HBO Max.
Oh, theater. I'll definitely watch it.
Right. What did you learn today?
That I'm watching that movie this weekend.
Oh, okay. Paulie?
You should actually watch it, because then you could watch the prequel and then the entire show in the right order.
So it's like Better Call Saul those who haven't watched Breaking Bad.
What I learned today is Michael Phelps was basically naked when he worked.
The compact GLA proves it's not the size of the SUV in the fight. It's the size of the fight in the SUV. Learn more about the nimble and ready for anything Mercedes-Benz vehicle. MBUSA.com, Mercedes-Benz, the best or nothing. Man, and we get paid to do this. Have a great weekend, everybody. Talk to you Monday.
Be sure to catch the live edition of the Dan Patrick Show weekdays at 9 a.m. Eastern, 6 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.